This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome to episode 139 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, February 21st, 2014. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, and Sarah Gooding's out today, but in her place, I have the wonderful plugin guru, Marcus Couch. Marcus, thank you for filling in today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Nice to be on the show again.
Not a problem. Let's see. We got a couple of things to talk about for this week before we bring on our special guest, Chris Wallace, co-founder of UpThemes. And the first is there is a security vulnerability that's been published, a company named Duo. Duo Security is a business that provides two-factor authentication services across multiple platforms. And late last week, the company announced on their blog that they discovered a security vulnerability in their WordPress plugin. Now, based on what I've seen here, I just want to clarify who might be at risk if you're using their plugin. And it's only WordPress multi-site deployments or networks that have chosen to deploy the plugin on an individual site basis. Normal WordPress deployments or multi-site deployments with the plugin enabled globally are not affected, and the user must still present correct primary authentication, for example, username and password. Only the second factor is bypassed. So basically what happens is if you have a WordPress multi-site network and there's two sites, you have site one and site two, and you have the plugin enabled for site one but disabled for site two, under normal circumstances, users that log into site one will be prompted for primary credentials and second factor authentication. Site two users will be prompted only for primary credentials. A site one user may force browse to the login URL of site two, which will authenticate the user as part of the same WordPress multi-site network and redirect them back to site one without prompting for second factor authentication. So if you're using Duo Security on one site within a multi-site network and you have it disabled on another, there is the possibility that by logging into the site where it's disabled, they can be able to force their way into a site that hasn't enabled. So it's not just one of the interesting things about this particular vulnerability, which they have not yet announced a permanent fix, they're working on it, is that they discovered that it exists in other two-factor authentication plugins. Duo Security announced that they've contacted those vendors to share their findings. And my advice is that if you currently use a two-factor authentication plugin other than Duo, for example, let's say Clef or a different type of plugin or service, you should contact the author of the vendor, ask them if their plugin contains the vulnerability and whether or not it's been fixed. So a pretty interesting thing there regarding two-factor authentication.
So I really think this is going to bring about a paradigm shift within security plugins, because we rely on them to protect us, and when they themselves become the vulnerability, then there's a huge problem there. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. So again, if you're using two-factor authentication, contact the service, see if the problem exists with that plugin. Hopefully it's not. Maybe they could fix it for you really quick. Aesop Story Engine, something we've talked about a few times on the show. In fact, we had Nick Haskins on a few episodes ago. His Story Engine plugin is now available on WordPress.org. So what do you think, Marcus? You've been you're a big fan of Aesop, and now it's available to the masses.
I'm ticked off. Now everybody gets to have it right from their dash. I hate it. No, I'm very happy for Nick, and I hope that everybody gets to take advantage of Aesop Story Engine. I've used it for a number of different things, and you know, I was watching the Chicago Bulls play somebody, and I happened to go onto their website while the game was going on, and it was just like Aesop's story. It was like one section had a player's in action in the background, and it had their stats of what was going on in the game. And then you scroll down a little bit more, and it had a tweet from the team. And you scroll down a little bit more, and it was shot selection. So it's like, wow, this this little sliced and diced kind of, as one listener described it, you know, pop-up book for WordPress really is going to change how we use and think of things. It's going to be more of a widgetized type of, you know, theme environment, and I'm sure Chris can chime in a little bit later, but man, Aesop's Story Engine is kind of the first stone cast, and I can't wait to see the rest that follow it.
Yeah, the big thing is themes. Themes for the Story Engine, you're going to need a theme support, either a theme that's been created specifically to take advantage of the features that Aesop's Story Engine has, or be able to build and support into an existing theme. There is documentation available on the website. I've been monitoring Nick Haskins' tweets over the past few days. He is working on a couple of different themes for Aesop. I'm not sure if they're going to be free or not, but I also saw an article earlier this week from Elegant Themes mentioning Aesop's Story Engine and the types of cool things that it offers. And it'd be really cool if somehow Nick could somehow partner up with a couple of different commercial theme companies, and whether they be free or whether he sets up a marketplace, get them to sort of dive into this new realm of WordPress themes and see if they can't create a theme specifically for Aesop's Story Engine and at least get 3, 4, maybe 5 different theme companies just create their vision of a theme that really takes advantage of what Aesop provides. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's many different things that you can do with Aesop, and I would also love to see more of a showcase of different people as far as what they can do with Aesop. So I think the one thing that's lacking is the beyond the basic visual demos that people have put out there and the things that Nick's done, we need to share a little bit more about what this framework can do, because, like I said, you can see these kinds of things on mainstream applications everywhere.
All right. So I think when we mentioned that in our interview with him, and I think that's just a matter of time when he gets to that part of the website. And when he does, it'll be really cool to see different ways on how people are using Aesop. Now, this next story, I think Marcus could help us out with. I wrote an article that discusses tips for promoting newly released plugins. I actually came across this question on Reddit, the subreddit for WordPress, where somebody asked, if you just developed a new plugin, what's the easiest way to get the word out about it? And in fact, when you start looking into it, there's no megaphone plugin authors can use to announce to the world that they've released a new plugin. And in fact, in my research, I discovered that on the WordPress.org plugin directory, you used to be able to see a listing of newest plugins available, but I don't see a publicly accessible link anymore.
Or at least no, you have to log in.
Oh, that's what it is. You have to log in. Mm-hmm. I knew you would know. but there is a RSS feed that you could subscribe to keep abreast of plugins that are new and have been released to the repository. The WordPress dashboard actually used to have a widget that showed the newest plugins that are in the repo, but that was removed in 3.8. So among some of the tips I suggested, of course, you can contact us at wptavern.com, which after this article was written, about 6 or 7 people have done, and we've already written about 1 or 2 of them. You can, in fact, Marcus, this is where you come in. You guys do a WordPress podcast dedicated to plugins. It's called Plugins A to Z, right?
Yeah, WordPress Plugins A to Z. You can find it at wppluginsa2z.com. And, you know, we have had plugin authors come on and talk about their plugins. I've got a show, Industry Night, and I talk to plugin authors on that. There are many different ways that you can get the word out. You just have to get the word out. The biggest thing is you've got to formulate. You've got to formulate what it is that your plugin can do beyond the description that you would put in the repository. Put a video together on YouTube as far as the plugin in action. If I can look and see the whole thing being worked out in front of me as far as from installation to actual implementation in 2 minutes' time, I'll talk about that. That's exactly what got me hooked into Aesop Story Engine, you know, initially, was the video that he made. So that's the way to do it. And you've got to get interactive, too. You've got to ask people that use it, comment in the repository. You know, I always ask people throughout the 10 years I've been podcasting, hey, rate me in iTunes, rate me in iTunes. Well, you know, the repository is iTunes for plugin developers, so they need to kind of treat it like that.
And after I install a plugin in the WordPress and it works, very rarely do I ever go back to the WordPress.org plugin page and rate the plugin. I hope that in some point in the future I can, I don't know if this makes sense, but go to my plugin administration page and just from there be able to mark plugins as favorites that are attached to my profile.
Sounds like a plugin right there, Jeff, thought of.
Or rate
you just
them.
Thought of a plugin that right actually...
Right from the back end of WordPress. I would like to see a lot of this stuff. I'd like to be able to do most of it from the back end of WordPress. Just by clicking buttons, you know.
Imagine the plugin you just invented there. That could be a contest for the listeners. Come up with a plugin where you can rate the plugin from your plugins list. There's just, you know, next to activate, deactivate, update, there's rate. And you get to click rate, and it goes right to the ratings page for that plugin.
Yeah, so, and if you need help promoting that plugin, contact us at wbtavern.com. I also mentioned that there's a subreddit dedicated to WordPress plugins, entirely dedicated to plugins. So if you release a new plugin, you want to spread the word, there's an entire section of Reddit available. And the thing I ended this post on is that plugin developers, I consider them to be problem solvers. You know, for the most part, plugins are just... answers to problems, solutions to problems, or sometimes it's just an itch that a developer has scratched. And, you know, more often than not, I think plugin developers are not looking for fame. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think it's more functionality. A lot of times a plugin will be created just because of necessity. A programmer
right.
just gets sick of doing one mundane task over and over and says, you know what, I'm going to script this out.
And for the most part, I think it's just... And they release their code, they open source it, they put it on the repository in the hopes that the problem they've solved for themselves is something that solves the problem for a lot of other people. And that's pretty much what it comes down to.
And then there are people like myself who come along and oftentimes tell these guys, hey, you know what, you forgot B and C. And they go, oh my God, and make those changes. And then it becomes a whole new thing. So that's why when we're talking about ratings and stuff, I mean, that's... Really, I think what's lacking is the back channel participation between user and developer, in the sense that maybe the repository needs to be a little beefier and maybe a little more socially than what it is, and maybe it would encourage that kind of contact.
Yeah, and I know that the WordPress.org profiles and repositories, even a theme repository, are all works in progress right now. And at some point, we're going to see a large revamp of all of them. And I'm sure things like this will be part of the revamp. So it's not like no work is being done to improve the situation. It's just that anytime you're messing around with WordPress.org and the profiles and the code behind it, I've seen it and I've been told by the people that work on it, it's a giant... just a giant project, you know. You got to take your time, and you really got to think things through before you implement and change stuff on that site.
Yeah, and there are still back-end functionalities in the repository now where you can actually, if you know somebody else's username, you can look at their favorites as far as their plugin favorites.
Right.
And I'd love to see how that could even expand socially down the road. But, you know, I have about a billion favorites. I'm sure people would love to see my list.
Speaking of plugins, there's a new tag that's being used. It's not official. It's sort of a grassroots effort from plugin developers to put their plugins up for adoption. So the adapt-me tag that's added to plugins signals to everyone else, especially developers, that their plugin is up for adoption. So there's been talk about the way to, you know, coming up with some way to adopt plugins, or the whole topic of plugin abandonment, which we've talked about on the show a couple of times before in the adoption program, hopefully can make some of those plugins that were going to end up in the graveyard have new life again by being adopted from new owners. So there's one example in here from somebody that's already using the Adopt Me tag is Christian Fulman, and he is using the tag on his Google Analytics MU plugin. And I think the way he did it is a great way to go about it. He not only added the tag to his plugin, but he also added a section to his short plugin description and the long plugin description where it says Adopt Me with a little bit like the reasoning for adopting the plugin. Now, I got into a little bit of a discussion here on Twitter before the show by telling people that, you know, I think plugin developers that want to have their plugin be adopted use that method versus just slapping a tag onto their plugin. However, I got in a little bit of, I guess, you know, the counter argument to that was I should not promote that method of the adoption program, the use of the tag, because then developers might think, well, if they have to apply this type of feedback or provide these descriptions, it might prevent a lot of people from using the tag regardless. So I as a user, you know, if a plugin is going to be up for adoption, I consider that plugin, no, that I as a user want to know about that because I think the plugin is dead. However, at the same time, I think in a perfect world, and I think this is a reason why you should just maybe sometimes just slap the tag on there as maybe the first step of the adoption process is just that would allow people, that would notify others that your plugin is up for adoption. And in a perfect world, somebody would come along, adopt the plugin, continue developing it, and I as a user of that plugin would not know the difference. I continue to receive updates, and I wouldn't even know that the change had occurred, and everybody's happy. But I think, you know, after a while, if you've added just the tag to your plugin and you don't haven't received any feedback or any interest in adopting it, then I think maybe you should add it to the descriptions. And also when you, I think just as a courtesy after a while, if you're really planning on maybe just giving up on providing any more updates in the plugin, the final update of the plugin from the original plugin author should include a description that the plugin is up for adoption, that there will be no more updates on this, and unless notified, you know, at some other point that maybe no user should start looking for a substitute.
And you know, it should be euthanized and deleted out of the repository.
Wow. So you deal with plugins all the time, Marcus, and you know, we've talked about plugin abandonment. What do you think about this adoption program that is really just a grassroots effort?
I love it, and I think that it should also, maybe there should be a plugin rescue, you know, like an animal rescue, where really people might evaluate something, maybe even as a group. Maybe there's a hot group of plugin rock stars out there who can take a new or an old plugin and, you know, just kind of retrofit it and make it to new. Who knows?
No, there was a service not too long ago. It's called WP Recycle,
or
Plugin Recycle. And the whole idea was if you had a plugin that you didn't want to work on anymore, you put it in this service, you let other people take a look at it, and if somebody wants to take it over, they take it over. But that service is no longer around anymore, so now we know how that went.
Yeah.
But I just want to let developers know, if you go to the plugin repository and you do a search by the Adopt Me tag, it'll show a listing of all plugins that have that tag on it. It's not an official tag. Again, it's a grassroots effort, and it's all volunteer-based. And it's just a way for plugin authors that would like to see their plugin continue be able to hand it off to somebody else. At least just an easy way to advertise that, hey, I don't want to work on this anymore. Somebody else take it over.
Yeah. It's like leaving the plugin at the farm, right? Just dropping it off.
So that's going to cover our headlines for this week. Let's bring on our special guest, Chris Wallace. He is the co-founder of UpThemes.com, a commercial theme company. And he is also the co-founder of Lyft, a user experience design company. And the reason why we have Chris on this week is about 2 weeks ago, give or take, The company UpThemes published an open letter to not only their customers, but to the general WordPress community. And after reading that letter, I considered it to be a wake-up call for pretty much anyone that develops themes. There's a lot of interesting information presented in that letter, and I thought it would be good to have him on and sort of dive into some of the specific reasonings behind what was said in that letter. Chris, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. I've been looking forward to this. Tell us how you got involved with WordPress theme development. And the interesting thing is the previous two guys we've had on the show have mentioned the same thing. They started out with building website templates and selling them before there was Template Monster and working with Flash. Now, you didn't do that, did you?
No, I actually started out kind of just as a tinkerer. I mean, I was building websites and designing things for charitable groups and churches and things like that when I was a teenager. And, you know, after a while, the whole Dreamweaver thing kind of turned me off to building websites and putting them together with tables and things like that. And eventually I started hearing about this thing called WordPress. And so I started using it a little bit, and I tried to install it. It was really easy to use. Granted, at the time, I mean, it wasn't really that easy, but compared to anything else I'd ever experienced, you know, it was a lot easier than the alternative. You know, and I figured out, hey, this is something that I could actually give to somebody else, and they can manage their content, and I don't have to worry about getting a call at 10 o'clock at night saying, hey, I can't edit this button on my website, you know. And so I ended up, you know, kind of getting more into the theme side of things and just really just hacking around. I mean, at the time, I mean, it was like there were very few resources. I think there was, you know, Small Potato with all of his tutorials and things like that. A few premium theme shops were around, and, you know, I kind of took a look at their stuff and saw how they were doing things. And then I started kind of building my own themes and decided I was going to start blogging and start releasing free themes. Because I wasn't really thinking of it as, you know, hey, this is something that I can make money doing. You know, in terms of the actual theme, I was making money on the services part where I was building sites for people. And so I started tinkering around building themes, and the first theme that I built was called Rusty Grunge. And this was, oh man, this was at the height of like the grunge movement, right? And so, you know, it had all these cool brushes and grungy styles on it and things like that.
Yeah, splotches and dirty and all
that. Yeah,
stuff.
You know, there's dirt all over it and like little, yeah, it was
right out of a Nirvana concert.
Yeah, and so I actually put it on WordPress.org, and, you know, I got a ton of traffic, I got a ton of downloads. There were people asking questions and saying, hey, this theme is awesome, you know, we love it. And, you know, eventually, this was years later, eventually I was approached to have the theme kind of redeveloped and put on WordPress.com. So it's actually still available on WordPress.com. I would not recommend using it. It's not really, you know, the most stylish theme. But but anyway, so my second theme, you know, I was like, well, I want to do something a little cool, you know, kind of a cool portfolio style. And so I went with kind of a gallery layout, and I actually called the theme Gallery. And this time I was like, well, you know, I really want to promote this. I want people to use it. I want people to know about it. And so I went through Smashing Magazine. And so they actually released it on their website. And obviously, I mean, with their audience, it just completely blew up. And it was really one of the first themes of its kind where, you know, it kind of had that CSS animation overlay hover kind of effect where you hover over it and the title reveals itself. And that, you know, really got a lot of people's attention, and a ton of people started using it, and it got a lot of traction. So that's when I started thinking, man, I really should actually try to make money with this, because it's becoming a full-time job, right? And so it was around that same time where, you know, I started talking to my business partner, my current business partner, Brad, about starting our own company, because I was working at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I was building enterprise.com. I was a front-end developer at the time. And so I was just kind of in that place where I wanted to switch from freelance over to, you know, to my own company and kind of run things, run the show and be in charge and set my own hours, you know, all the the dream, right? Of
what kind of platform was Enterprise using, just out of curiosity?
Oh gosh. It was Java, actually.
Oh boy.
I would not go back to something like that. I mean, the amount of work it took just to get something approved. They wouldn't even allow us to use jQuery, which at the time, you know, I mean, this was, gosh, 2007. And so for them, open source was like, no, we're not doing that. That's a security risk, or, you know, everybody has access to this code. We can't put anything on, you know, on our site that is open source because everybody knows what it is.
And yeah, that's still out there today. That's the same policy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's becoming less of a barrier nowadays, you know, which is good. It's a good thing because I think people are starting to realize that, you know, obscurity is not the best way to make a, you know, to build a secure website and environment. So, I basically, you know, I met up with Brad and we started Lyft, and then a few months later, UpThemes was born.
Yeah, so, you know, speaking of UpThemes, you guys launched in March of 2010 at the South by Southwest Conference, which I thought was just a conference that everybody goes to and parties. But you guys actually launched a business there. So how did that come about, launching at that specific event? Was that planned?
It was planned, yes. In retrospect, I will never launch at, you know, some sort of event like that again, because I'd much rather spend my time hanging out at the event. But at the same time... you know, it was a really good thing. It kind of gives you that drive to really push through and get things, you know, pushed out there at a time where people are kind of excited about something and you want to be attached and kind of ride that wave of excitement. The only problem with that, you know, obviously is you have so many other companies out there that are doing the same thing, right? So you've got companies that are, you know, maybe like 50 companies a day at South by Southwest launching a new app or a new service. And so it kind of... You know, there are benefits to it, but then there are also kind of some downsides, you know, depending upon how you're promoting it and what outlets you're using to announce that. So we launched at South by Southwest. It was a good experience. We definitely saw a really, really solid response. That's when we announced the first version of the UpThemes framework. Which actually was a really well received options panel, and we saw companies like Mojo Themes actually picked it up, and for a while they were recommending it to all their sellers as kind of the base options framework that they want them to use. So it ended up being a pretty popular thing, even with all the SEO and typography and all those things kind of packed into it.
We're gonna talk about the UpThemes. Theme framework here in a little while, but going back to UpThemes, so you guys launched in 2010, it's been 4 years, and you write this open letter, and I want to know what provoked you to write an open letter, not only to the customers of UpThemes, but to the WordPress community in general.
Sure, so I mean, I'm a very open and honest person, and you know, I'm the first person to admit when I know that I failed at something, or you know, I need to come clean about something, and that was something that was on my heart, just as a business owner and somebody that you know that people rely on and trust, and you know, the companies that we work with, you know, that you know, if I go to Dropbox, for example, you know, and I give them my personal information and I give them my credit card, I expect them to be transparent with me as well, and you know, I expect them to treat me like family. And that's really what kind of moved me to publish that letter and really set a course for our company that I think people can really get on board with, because, you know, I want to be treated a certain way, right? And everybody feels that way, I think, where you want to be treated like somebody that should know things, you know, when something changes with a subscription or when something is released that you should know about. Really, I mean, everybody wants to be in the loop, right?
Right.
And I felt very strongly that this was something that needed to be said. I wanted to make it very clear that, you know, we have made mistakes, you know, and I think everybody can admit that. But at the same time, we're not just going to fold. We're not just going to say, all right, well, this was an experiment. You know, this was something that we tried, we failed, and now we're, you know, closing down and moving on. This is something that we really feel strongly that we can provide a really great product. And we have provided a really great product, and mainly it's been on the services side where, you know, where we've built things, you know, for other companies that have done really well. They've been nominated for awards. We even got an Emmy nomination for an app that we built. So,
yeah, congratulations.
Yes. No, thank you. Yeah, that was actually for people that are listening that don't know, we were nominated for an Emmy for the Walking Dead Story Sync, which is a second screen app that is kind of a companion app for The Walking Dead. While you're watching the show, you can kind of follow along on your iPad or your computer or whatever, and it drops in quizzes and videos, and you can chat with other people, and it's kind of an interactive thing. It's kind of a, you know, kind of a deal where they want to get people to watch the show live so they can get the, you know, more engagement and more buzz around the show and more advertising revenue, obviously.
Well, everybody's, you know, sort of seen that as, oh, WordPress, something by WordPress got nominated for an Emmy. You know, that really caught the buzz of a community.
Yeah, no, I think it did. I mean, it's fun to get into WordPress and do other things than just build a basic website, right? So you can use WordPress for just about anything these days.
Right. What's your impression of things like AppPress, some of the new platforms out there that are specifically designed to turn WordPress into an app?
Oh, gosh, I love it. I think that's one of those things that, as a small business owner, say you're an independent, you know, kind of WordPress development shop or something, and you now have this plugin, this framework that you can now pitch mobile apps to pretty much anybody. I mean, if you want to work with some of the largest companies in the world building mobile apps, iOS native, you know, native apps, now you can. You know, yeah. It enables people to really go out and see what they can do. And we've already got a ton of ideas for what we want to do with it.
Yeah, same here. I was in the realm of, you know, boy, I'd love to have an app that does what this plugin can do for me. You know, and then along comes AppPress, and it's like, wow, I don't have to learn Objective-C now. Awesome. You know, so it's, and I'm waiting to see what the next thing WordPress can do beyond app stuff. When can it get into television? When can I pop an app for, you know, Apple TV or something like that through this thing? That's going to be great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm really excited about where things are going, and I think the whole concept of separating plugins from themes, I think people are starting to see that. They're starting to see, hey, I can do really cool stuff with this, and I don't have to make it one single theme that does all this stuff. I can build a plugin that maybe the plugin lives completely outside of WordPress in terms of there's a dedicated page where you're not even on a page being served by the theme. Maybe it's something where you've hijacked one of the permalinks or something like that, and it serves its own, you know, enclosed app, which is something that we're doing right now with IssuePress, a plugin that we're releasing into beta next week. So we're gonna
talk more about that here in a little bit in terms of what's going on with themes. But I want to start back from the beginning a little bit with
sure.
regards to up themes, because I think it's important that we sort of go through this process to find out where you were at the beginning, in a thought process at the beginning, and some of the decisions you guys made almost made the company not work out financially, and why currently today, why you have this whole new outlook on things and the new way of doing things. So the first 12 months of UpThemes was a challenging time for the company. You mentioned in the letter that you didn't know what users truly needed. So I'm wondering, how did you pick and choose what the first few commercial themes would be if you didn't know what users needed?
Sure. So I think at first what our strategy was really we threw stuff against the wall, and whatever stuck, you know, kind of was something that we would attach to, right? And I think everybody's done that. I mean, when you start a company or you have an idea, you know, as an entrepreneur, that's sort of the initial process, right? Is what can I build that people actually will want? You know, and I think at the very beginning, we kind of got into a backwards way of thinking where we were building the themes first and then asking how can customers use this now, rather than kind of approaching it from as a consumer, what kind of theme, you know, can I use to, you know, build a site for, you know, for an attorney when I need that, you know, when I need a site for my lawn and garden business, you know, how do I go about that? I mean, kind of starting at the very beginning, like what are people passionate about? And then what steps would they take to kind of take that to another level and build a website for it? And I think starting at the beginning of that process is very important because you sort of learn a lot about what you need to do to, you know, to be part of that process for a user. And until you kind of start thinking about that kind of stuff, you think of it from just a code perspective. As a developer, you want to just write really cool code, you know, really clean, neat, organized code, maybe really simple code, or maybe it's, you know, writing specific functionality that you think would be really cool. But really, I think at the very core, you have to strip all that away. Don't think of it in terms of, you know, what you know about code. Think of it in terms of what you know about, you know, maybe your mom, you know, has a collection of recipes that your grandma passed down or something like that, and she wants to put them online in a blog or, you know, some sort of recipe index. You know, what's the process for that? Where would she look to do that? Would she use WordPress? Would she use something else? How can you make that process easier? And I think when you kind of approach it from that perspective, you know, our initial way of doing things was way off, you know, because we were just building the themes, right? We just said, oh, well, this is a two-column blog theme. Well, you know, that's kind of skipping a whole bunch of steps, right? It's like, so you're building this, and then you're trying to kind of find a market for it and retrofit it. And what we should be doing is finding the market first and then approaching that market and saying, how can we make this better for you, you know, in terms of communicating what you're passionate about or communicating what you do every day as a, you know, as a small business owner or, you know, whatever that is. And I think that's the approach that we need to take moving forward. And that's what we've done wrong previously.
And I can share one tip for theme developers out there who are struggling and trying to find ways to compartmentalize different industries. Go look at what themes exist as far as templates for business cards. Go look at Overnight Prints or one of those and look at some of the designs that they come up with for different business cards in different industries. You're going to find plumbing and roofers and contractors to bakers to, you know, all kinds of different, any type of template that they make for a little business card to be handed out. You could be making themes for those industries as well.
Definitely.
So you admit in the letter that making a profit on commercial themes was something the company initially struggled with. And, I look around today, and I just recently I saw that somebody else got Power Elite status on ThemeForest because they made $1 million through their Envato marketplace, and they have other theme authors that are making $1 million. So what was so hard about making a profit when it comes to selling themes, at least from UpTheme's point of view?
Well, I think from the UpTheme side of things, I think one of the big things was we really struggled to market the themes because of the way we built them, right? So we didn't build them according to the market need, and so selling them kind of was a confusing thing because we didn't really have this one set of themes. Like, say, we didn't have, you know, themes for designers for their portfolio or something like that. We maybe had one that would work for that. Like the gallery theme was, you know, was a perfectly fine option to use for a portfolio theme, but the problem was we didn't really have any channels where we could market those themes effectively, and just, you know, we just failed at the marketing side of things initially because of that. And so, I mean, for us, a small theme shop who really we were making our money, you know, in services with Lyft, you know, we didn't have that kind of time to really invest – in the themes side of things initially. So that kind of got neglected. And really, I mean, it's a matter of you get out what you put in, right? So we got out what we put in, which, as you know, as time went on, we started working more and more on the Lyft side. And while we were doing cool things over there, you know, the other side was just kind of suffering. And so that's something that, you know, lately we've really addressed that, and made sure that now we're really focusing on, you know, not only doing services, but also making sure we spend the time on the products and really go through and iterate and, you know, pick up anything that a user may say and review it and say, is this something that, you know, maybe we should make it better or easier, or maybe outline something in the documentation that makes it easier for people to use? Or, you know, we kind of have a better process now of iterating on the themes, supporting our customers, and kind of keeping the entire life cycle of the project moving forward, rather than, you know, letting it die, or, you know, just ignoring, you know, maybe things that we could do to improve and help grow our community of users and support them in what they're doing.
Now, as it relates to income and generating revenue, and it comes down to pricing themes. And I know in the letter you mentioned that you noticed other theme companies in a race to the bottom selling theme club memberships at $39 a year or less. And there was even a mention of a membership site that was selling membership for $5 per year, which is insane. Did any of those companies have an influence on how UpThemes priced their products? Did you feel like, boy, you just can't compete with those guys just on a price perspective? I mean, did it really influence the way you guys sold themes?
Well, I mean, when you look at it from an economic perspective, I mean, it at a certain level, it makes sense, okay? So, you know, you go out there and you sell a $39 a year theme club membership. Well, that's a no-brainer for a lot of developers, right? You know, there's really not much risk for signing up for something like that. There's not much risk in, you know, recurring in keeping that recurring revenue going. You know, spending $39 a year to get access to however many themes, 60, 70, 80, whatever, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer, right? So, you know, as long as you're onboarding enough people, it sort of builds up over time. And as long as you're bringing in more people than are going out, it works, right?
What's the level that you have to get to?
It works, but I don't know, $5? I mean, you'd have to bring a lot of people.
Yeah, how many people? What's the break even for something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the $5 level is I think insane, because you look at the total you look at the total number of people that could be using your service, and really, I mean, if you're getting into the millions, right, and you have the potential to multiply 50,000 users by $40 a year, you know. That the multiple on that isn't too bad, you know, and you can.
Is that a realistic number, 50,000, that somebody could expect if they have a fairly successful theme?
Oh, it takes time, yeah, but it's definitely reasonable. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, Elegant Themes, I think Nick's done an amazing job with that, and really, it's a hard business model to replicate, because it's difficult to maintain and support that many themes and to keep adding to it. Year after year. I mean, you know, after a while, it becomes kind of a race, right? I mean, you've got so much code and only so many resources to edit that code and maintain that code and all that. And eventually, I mean, do you just stop selling certain themes and retire them, or do you redevelop them? How does that work exactly?
Well, you know, at one point, you stopped creating 1 to 2 themes per month, at least UpThemes did, and you guys started to focus on consulting projects through your secondary company, Lyft. So what happened? You guys weren't making enough money through UpThemes, making enough revenue, so, you know, you obviously had to do more of the consulting projects to stay afloat?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it was, at least not initially, it wasn't a matter of, you know, we weren't making any money. We were making some money. I think just the demand of a services-oriented business, you know, I think that sort of just tends to eat up your priorities a little bit, in terms of, you know, certain companies will come to you and they'll say, hey, we've got a project, and, you know, sometimes that project you quoted out and it takes a certain amount of time. Sometimes, you know, you go way beyond the initial scope. It takes, you know, more time, and you just kind of go down a rabbit hole where you're spending a ton of time, you know, getting into these projects for other companies, and you just sort of lose track of the time for, you know, for your own projects or side projects or, you know, themes in our cases, you know, in the case of a theme shop like ours, where you just kind of, you get away from, you know, you lose your focus, you get away from being able to just hop in there every week and maintain certain bits of the code base or update the UpTeams framework or add features to it, because you're being directed by someone else, you know, from the services side, where they're saying, hey, you know, we've got this deadline, you know, we've got to crank hard on it. And there's nothing wrong with that, but at the same time, you know, you have to make sure that if you are running a business where you have other customers that have expectations, you really have to meet those expectations.
Now, I think it's interesting that at one point you mentioned in the letter that UpTeams just ran out of time to build awesome products, and instead the time that the company was using was spent to all of the process running the business and managing back-end technologies and messing around with a member, the membership service and plugin you guys were using. You know, how did the company end up in that position? Was that just the best that was available at the time, or?
Yeah, so I mean, the big thing for the, like, from the technology side of things, you know, we didn't have anything like EC Digital Downloads at the time. We didn't have really easy ways to maintain software licensing, you know, and add keys to your WordPress admin, you know, that then provided automatic updates. And we didn't have the automatic updater, you know, system that's in place now, where you can automatically upgrade your WordPress overnight. Nobody even knows what's going on. It just happens in the background, which is amazing. And I think, you know, just over time, we just spent so much time trying to perfect those processes of how do we deliver our themes to our customers? You know, how do we sell them? How do we provide them with those updates? How do we support those customers? We just spent so much time trying to dig out from bad, you know, technology like A-Member that really kind of goes against the grain of what we were trying to do, which is keep things simple and keep things very effortless for the customer. And it just kind of added more roadblocks, not only for the customer, but for us as well, in terms of that took up more of our time than actually building the themes.
So what you're saying is if anyone's going to start a membership or a theme club membership today, boy, they got it easy, you know, with all these different tools and technologies available today.
Yeah, they really do. You know, and I think a lot of it was, you know, initially we didn't really know a lot about the proper way to provide that kind of support through WordPress. And, you know, as we grew and as we got better at things, you know, we started automating a lot of stuff. We started automating our theme releases. You know, we now use GitHub. We also use a service called Deploy HQ, which allows us to basically deploy our themes very quickly. We deploy whenever we push to the master branch for all of our themes. And those themes, those updates are then pushed to our site immediately. And so we don't have to spend time zipping up themes manually or anything like that anymore. You know, we got smarter about that. And so now that we have all those all that automation in place, you know, it really gives us the time to kind of go back and actually spend the time in the themes and with our customers that we really should have been initially.
So I think one of the most fascinating things about your letter is the part where you talk about you come to the realization you expected that themes that you created through UpThemes you would be able to use in client work, but it turns out you didn't end up using them, and you found out that they were just not as easy as they should have been. And those types of themes are not used for everyday work. So what was going through your mind when you sort of came across that realization, whether it was you or the company? that these are the types of themes you guys created. I mean, what's by utilizing the themes you guys created on client work, was that sort of the wake up call to say, hey, wow, this is what we actually created, and this is not cool?
Yeah, so I think when we first, like, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about building for specific verticals or specific markets. Because we weren't doing that, because we weren't focused on the end user and what they needed, and we were really more focused on the actual themes themselves and the code and everything like that. It made it kind of difficult for us to, I don't know.
That had to be quite the reality check. To realize that your products that you created, that you wanted to help simplify and solve problems for end users, were not doing that. They were actually not designed in the way that made customers' lives easier.
Right. Well, and the thing was, is I mean, I would use some of the themes on my own website, but you know, other employees from the company, you know, when they go out and look for a theme, they weren't necessarily going to UpThemes and just picking from one of ours. You know, I mean, they were going out and looking at other themes, and you know, I'm totally cool with that. You know, if we're not building products that we would use, I want to know that. You know, and I want to solve that problem. You know, I want to know what kind of theme, you know, one of our employees wants to use for maybe a side project that he is working on in his spare time. I want to know that. You know. I don't mind if you use a different theme, because that shows me, hey, we're not meeting this particular need. And maybe it's not a need that we're, or maybe it's not a market that we're going after specifically, and that's fine too. Maybe they need something that's a little more tailored for, you know, a project they're working on. But at the same time, if they're starting a blog, you know, I'd like them to look at our themes as a starting point, right? I mean, that only makes sense, right? We're a WordPress theme company, and if we don't have a blog theme that they could probably use as a starting point, then we're likely failing them, because we want to be kind of our own customer as well. You know, just like having themes available that we can provide to clients with Lyft, we want to have themes that we can use too.
Right. You know? I mean, that only makes sense. You're killing two birds with one stone there. You're offering great themes for customers to use, and you're also making themes that, you know, if you have a theme that gels with what a client needs, you just use it. You know, there's no issues involved. There's, you know, just right. Makes sense. Now, I know we're sort of running short on time here, but I have a couple more questions for you. Sure. In the letter, you say, quote, "It doesn't matter how many themes we produce. As long as we're building themes the right way, we can make 50 themes or just one theme. When we're building themes that meet a need and work incredibly well, we can't lose," end quote. Now, a little further down from that paragraph in the letter, you mentioned simplicity as the feature. I'm just curious, what does it say to you that we're at a point in the, WordPress theme ecosystem where simplicity is looked at as a feature instead of a starting point?
Well, I think...
I mean, we've sort of come a long way to... I mean, I've mentioned this to Jason Schuler and a couple of other people that, you know, it seems like we were in this cycle where, you know, a few years ago we wanted widgets, layout builders. We wanted everything within the theme so that we didn't have to touch code, and we can manipulate how the theme worked and functioned, and usually that involved just a gigantic option page. And,
right.
You could just have all these different controls, you know, like the space shuttle, you know, all these different options to control how the theme works and functions. Now, it seems like we're all the way on the other side of the spectrum where, okay, let's rip everything out. The first thing that we should focus on is content and how it's presented. Everything else is just sort of auxiliary, and we sort of come back to that now where simplicity is the feature, and it's sort of refreshing.
Yeah, well, I think the big thing is, like, if you look at Google, for example, what do you see when you go to the Google homepage?
Just a search box, a cool Google Doodle, and you know whatever they're promoting with one line underneath the search box. But right. It's always been just a box.
Right, exactly. So what you get when you go to Google is the absolute simplest experience that you possibly can get, right? You get the ability to enter freeform, whatever you want, and search, you know, right away. And that's exactly, you know, kind of the approach that we're taking is we want the, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean there's not a lot of code behind it, but it does mean that when users download one of our themes and use one of our themes, that we want that experience for them to be seamless. We want it to be just like they're using WordPress core itself, right? So that's why the UpThemes framework is based on the Settings API, right? So anytime that you build a theme with the UpThemes framework, we add everything, you know, just like WordPress would with the Settings API. Everything's sanitized through there. You know, everything is secure through there, where we're not creating our own structures and our own pathways for, you know, for things to be stored and saved and things like that. We're using exactly what you would use if you were building WordPress, building onto it. And in addition, we use, you know, we use the theme customizer now.
Yeah, and I think that's been a huge boon to having consistency among all the different themes on how to configure different parts of a theme, which is usually, you know, I haven't seen a theme customizer with a bazillion different options. Usually it's just maybe primary color, background color, header image and title, and maybe a few other things. And at least in the near future, we're going to see the ability to edit preview widgets live with the customizer before you can actually save changes. But theme customizer has definitely been one of the main reasons that we're now starting to see consistency in how to edit themes.
Sure. Yeah. And so, I mean, really just the simplest of things, you know, I think it comes down to, you know, a color scheme change. You know, you can put that in the customizer. Yeah. You want to just change the sidebar from the left side to the right side. You put that in the customizer. You can see the live preview before it actually, you know, goes into place, you know, by hitting save. And, you know, just a simple header image change or a background color change, things like that. I mean, it's just absolutely huge. I think it's the simplest experience to go native, you know, to plant those items in the customizer versus a theme options panel. And it really should be limited to just the display of the theme, right? I don't think you should put in, you know, a ton of additional options like fave icons and, you know, a bunch of, you know, other things that kind of enhance the theme SEO-wise or anything like that. Let the user go out and, you know, download Yoast's SEO plugin, which is a great plugin, or, you know, come up with something on their own. If they want to put custom, you know, stuff into their site, then let them do it, you know.
Could that customizer also evolve to where you can maybe save a couple sandbox versions of the customizer and be able to maybe load, you know, a theme from a different person, but yet load my presets for my customizer that automatically recognizes which way I like my color schemes and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad idea. I think that's definitely something that we could see in the near future.
Maybe we'll see an UpThemes customizer.
Yep, I get 15% of that idea, by the way.
On the topic of plugins, one of the last paragraphs, and this sort of harkens to the refreshed UpThemes and the starting from scratch that the company is now doing. But you mentioned examples, church theme content, audio theme, recipe schemas. These are all plugins that are built for specific sets of functionality. So I'm wondering, do you think these types of plugins will catch on and substitute putting all of that functionality into the themes like most of them do nowadays? Or will theme authors continue to do things their own way?
I think we've seen a shift already. I think with WooThemes releasing their,
portfolio.
It's a portfolio, you know, and a couple others coming out with similar, you know, functionality and content post type plugins. I think we've already started to see that shift, and I think it's been in the works for quite some time because I know for a fact that WooThemes can't continue to support all of the custom functionality that they've loaded into a number of their themes over time, you know, separately. They're going to have to eventually consolidate, and that's what they're doing. And that's a smart thing to do. And for us, it made more sense to literally just blast everything, right? So we blasted all our themes. We blasted all our plugins. And as we kind of rebuild those or release new ones, you know, obviously we're not going to rebuild every theme we ever released from the ground up because I don't think that makes a lot of sense. It doesn't really fit the style and the model that we're going after, the verticals we're going after now. But I think that you know, really separating things out to the point where, you know, we don't have, I mean, I think the most options that we have in a theme right now is maybe four. And that's color scheme, simple layout selection, and footer text, and maybe, you know, one other thing. But it's getting to the point where, you know, if you need a portfolio, why would you buy a theme and then load in all this work only to lose it by changing themes later?
And that's pretty much the point that everybody is making now, you know. That, right. And I you know, I just imagine Justin Tadlock when he I could just imagine him with the biggest smile on his face when he read, you know, the open letter from a company like UpThemes, or he sees other theme developers going the way of functionality and plugins presentation in the theme, because this is something he's talked about and hammered away on. You know, it was one of the main reasons for his ThemeForest experiment, to try and change the thinking of theme developers over there. And we've mentioned this show, you know, a couple of times before about theme locking, you know, with custom post types, specific functionality tied to the theme, short codes. So with all this said, tell us the new direction UpThemes is headed in. I mean, you already said that you've nuked all the themes, but, I mean, with a fresh start, what can we expect from UpThemes?
Sure. So one of the big themes that we're actually working on right now is called Uplifted, which is a church theme. We mentioned that we're building off of the church theme framework, which is just fantastic, by the way. One of the most extensive yet easy to use frameworks that I've seen that really, really enhances everything that you do. So we're actually set to release a beta version and release that theme in the next couple of weeks. And we're actually just going after certain verticals, right? So the church market is one area that we're getting into. We also have a recipe blog theme, Yum Blog, which we just released on
WordPress.com.
Yeah.
And so, I tweeted about that last night. I said that your new theme makes me hungry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those themes that, on WordPress.com, there really aren't many food blog-oriented themes. And so that's something that we're trying to fix.
That's crazy, because
it blows me away.
It wasn't too long ago that WordPress.com announced a partnership with, I don't know who it was, but they were going to start these verticals on WordPress.com, and there are a ton of food bloggers on WordPress.com. And I think it was a site that was going to aggregate all that different types of content. But I guess, well, what you're saying is there's not a lot of good presentations to display food type blogs.
Yeah, there really just aren't that many. When you do a search for maybe like a food blog theme, there's hardly anything there, and hardly anything that looks good, because most of them are the free themes, and they're kind of, you know, they've just got that free theme look to them, you know, and that's something that we saw that and we were like, oh, we've got to get a food blog theme up there, because it's going to blow up, and it already has. I mean, it wasn't even announced, and we had 10 sales, you know, in a day. So that one's doing extremely well.
Now, is that using the recipe schema plugin?
It does. Now, the WordPress.com version does not. However, they do have a recipe shortcode that we take advantage of that's inside Jetpack, that's fairly new, and I don't think many people know about it, but we actually use that. Which it adds all the schema as well as, you know, the recipe schema plugin. So it's a very similar bit of functionality, except it does not create a custom post type for recipe. So that's the only difference. But yeah, we use the recipe schema plugin, which is a fantastic plugin for importing recipes. You can literally just drag and drop, you know, your text for a recipe into their importer, and then you just select, you know, with the mouse cursor, you highlight the ingredients, and you can mark it as the ingredients section. You highlight the directions, and you mark it as the directions. And then all that will go into Google so that you can search it, you can see all, you know, all that stuff shows up as schema that's attached, you know, to your search result. And you can, you know, you attach an image, it'll show up next to your Google search result and everything like that. And for food bloggers, like people that share recipes, that is absolutely huge. That's crucial. And so we separate that out. We make sure that, you know, you can do all that with the recipe schema plugin, store all your recipes, and you don't have to use our theme, but obviously you're going to get a nice, pretty
it's going to look display. Good if you do.
Exactly.
Well, last but not least, I got one question I want to throw at you here in the chat room. It's a pretty good question. But for anyone out there, aspiring theme developers, current or new, I know, you know, we already mentioned Yumblog, and I know UpThemes has a theme called Amplify that takes advantage of the audio theme, audio plugin framework, just a plugin that is all about audio and has support for playlists and everything else like that. In your experience thus far of using plugins that provide most of the functionality you need where you're not bundling or coding it into the theme, has this been a more enjoyable coding experience? How has it worked out? And can you tell all of the theme developers out there whether or not it's been beneficial than actually going at it alone and building the functionality yourself?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, it's so much better to kind of lean on the experts in their particular field. And for this audio theme plugin, I don't know if you guys know Brady and Brody Vircher and Luke McDonald, but they're the guys behind Audio Theme, and they are absolutely phenomenal at what they do. And so working with them has been absolutely incredible. It's always good to collaborate with other people, especially when it's an open source kind of thing, right? So it kind of gives you enjoyment to know that you're building something that's helping somebody else, right? And they're building something that's helping you. And you really rely on each other for that relationship and that support, building products kind of together, even though you're not the same company or you may have different goals. But it sort of brings everybody together in that way. And, yeah, so, I mean, we're really excited about, you know, doing stuff like that, collaborating with some of the best in our industry. So, yeah.
Garand in the chat room wants to know, considering the content of the open letter, the company seems to be spending more time and energy on up themes. Do you see the company spending less time on client work and more time on themes and other products as time goes on?
This is actually a loaded question because he works for us. But, okay. Yeah.
He follows that up with, when's he getting a raise?
Yeah. No. Yeah, well, first of all, you're not getting a raise. Second of all, we are. I mean, that's really the goal, right? I think that we're always going to have those two sides of our business where one side is services, one side is product, because I really do feel that they feed into each other. And then it's a great outlet for employees to be able to, you know, work on a client project, but then also have something that kind of is their own baby that they can kind of, you know, grow up with, you know, and build. And kind of take ownership of. And I think that's very important.
Speaking of products, I keep seeing this mentioned in the chat room. What is IssuePress?
All right, so IssuePress, so this is a plugin that we've been working on for, gosh, I mean, it's been over a year, almost two, really. Almost every developer in the world is familiar with GitHub at this point. IssuePress is a plugin that aims to sort of bridge the gap between providing support in a forum kind of setting where it's on your own website and GitHub issues, where more, you know, developer-y kind of things are reported, and, you know, development tasks are being worked on there. So what IssuePress is basically a page on your website that lists out all of your, you know, maybe it's a private repository that you're providing support to a customer on. It lists out those repositories, and then your customers can actually communicate directly in GitHub through that interface. So they don't have to sign up for a GitHub account. They don't have to log in there ever. They just go to your website, log in with their own normal user account within WordPress, and they're taken to IssuePress, which it's a single-page app built with Angular.js, which is similar to kind of like a backbone with like live data binding and things like that. And so they can actually communicate directly with the developers, and it sort of removes that middleman, you know, where normally you have your forum software and your people are communicating there, and it kind of has a disconnect, right? Because then you also have to maybe move that issue over into GitHub. Right. And this kind of it unifies that the support process for developers and bridges the gap a little bit.
Nice. So if people want to find out more information, you can visit issuepress.co, and there's a link on there to where you could subscribe and find out more information for when the product will be released. Sounds pretty cool. Marcus, do you have any questions here for Chris before we let him go?
No, I really look forward to just kind of seeing the development cycle as far as where you're taking it. And are you planning on taking advantage of a lot of the new parallax kinds of technologies that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the parallax stuff...
If you do, don't do it the way Katy Perry's website does it, because, oh my goodness.
Oh, really?
That's the wrong way to do parallax. I mean, when you scroll up and down real fast, it looks like she wants me. Which, I don't know, maybe she does.
We haven't gotten too much into the parallax stuff. We are working on a theme called Worldview, mm-hmm. which if you actually go to demos.upthemes.com/worldview, it's kind of got a medium sort of feel when you go to a single post and then you click, you scroll down to the bottom and click the next post. It kind mm-hmm. of animates it up into view. So, I mean, we're doing stuff like that, not necessarily the parallax concept, but we are getting more into CSS animation and things like that.
Yeah, anything that a theme company can do to sort of bring medium-esque type stuff to WordPress seems to be a hot little trend right now, especially for commenting, stuff like that.
It definitely is, yeah. I mean, I think they've sort of set the bar for a lot of things. You know, the long-form content market in general really looks to sites like Medium and Subtle, you know, back, you know, when before Subtle got ripped off into 6,000 different, you know, copycat themes.
Awesome. So, Chris, I want to thank you very much for spending this time on the show with us. I mean, I just find your open letter to be fascinating. I hope a lot of theme authors out there, whether they're selling themes or just developing them, read it and took it as a wake-up call because, I mean, in all honesty, the way you guys develop themes initially almost crippled the company. I mean, at one point, you guys were not making any revenue. Creating themes came to a grinding halt, and the decisions you made, you know, Upthemes almost went belly up, you know, so to speak. But now, thankfully, you guys were able to make these different types of realizations and see where you can make improvements and sort of remove all the things that were just obstacles for customers. And now you have this revamped view of simplicity, and let's, instead of building everything in the theme, let's use something that exists in a plugin and build support for it and do things. Everything's easier to maintain. There's less code. I think, you know, with this new outlook, a new way of doing things, Upthemes has a bright future out of it.
Thanks, Jeff. I think we're definitely onto something, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
No problem. So you could visit Chris Wallace at where can we keep in touch with you?
Just follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/ChrisWallace.
Okay, and then also upthemes.com, obviously.
Obviously.
And all the best to you, and definitely love what you guys are doing. I love that yummy blog, and I'm getting hungry already.
All right, thanks, guys.
Awesome. So that was Chris Wallace of Upthemes.com, and before we wrap up the show, Marcus, why don't you go ahead and give us your plugin picks of the week?
You got it. WP construction mode is like one of those coming soon or maintenance mode types of plugins, except this one is really nice because you can isolate specific posts or pages that are under construction that admin can see.
Now that's different than most because usually it's the whole website or nothing. So that's pretty neat.
That's right. Second plugin that I've got out is something that's kind of one of those no-brainers. It's one of those little lazy plugins. It's called Link Images to None, and it basically takes all of the images that you upload in the Media Center, and rather than defaulting to the actual image itself as being the link, it defaults everything to none. So it's just one of those set it and forget it type things where it just prevents you from that extra step of having to delete everything. And then finally, I've got a real doozy of a plugin. It's called WP Pipes. Now, Jeff, were you ever a user of Yahoo Pipes?
No, I was not, but I am familiar with the terminology. I think it was some sort of development framework or something.
Actually, no. It's more of a content and post sort of a mashup tool where you can take things from one feed and mix them into another feed and then export
it out. It's like a crazy way to create like widgets, sort of.
Sort of, yeah. But basically, there's a new plugin called WP Pipes that makes a similar type of service right within WordPress. So what you can do is get posts from other WordPress posts that you have and export that out as an RSS feed that can feed into something else. You can take only specific fields or things like that from a feed and export it out. Maybe it's going to be going to an e-commerce site or a different site or something like that. You can basically take it to where it does every document in your entire WordPress installation that you may have uploaded, and then it exports it to Google Drive for you automatically, so you have a backup.
That's nice.
All kinds of different variations. It's literally just a construction kit of moving content from one direction to the other. So it's really nice. WP Pipes. Check it out.
Awesome. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. Next week, we're going to be joined by two guests, Tony Perez and Dre Armada from Securi. And they're going to be here to talk everything about WordPress security. We haven't done a WordPress show like that in a while. And, boy, WordPress security, where do we start? You know, there's an endless list of things we could talk about, and that's what we're going to do next Friday on the 28th of February. So with that said, you can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on wptavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's J-E-F-F-R-0. You can find out everything Marcus Couch is up to at marcuscouch.com, and you are at Marcus Couch on Twitter, correct?
That is correct.
And just a little bit of subliminal advertising, Marcus Couch, Marcus Couch, Marcus Couch. So until next week, have a safe weekend, everybody.